I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The author M.G. Vasanji joins me again. He's got a new novel out, The Magic of Saida. He takes the reader to the land of his upbringing, Tanzania, where he sets this book. Kamal is a successful doctor in Edmonton, and in his middle age, he decides to go back to Tanzania to find the girl he loved when he was younger, Saida. The book is described as breathtakingly beautiful, a shocking novel of belonging, longing, broken promises, and race. It's also described as complex, so we'll get Dr. Vasanji to tell us about this book. M.G. Vasanji has written 6 novels, 2 collections of stories, and 2 works of nonfiction. His novels have won many prizes, including the Commonwealth Writers' Prize, and his book, A Place Within Rediscovering India, which he was on last with, received the Governor General's Literary Award for Nonfiction. His books have been shortlisted for the Giller Prize, which he's won twice, the Writers Trust Fiction Prize, and the Governor General's Literary Award for Fiction. mgvasanji.com is his website. This new book is published by Doubleday. He's in Vancouver today, but he'll be back in a couple of weeks for 2 events at the Vancouver International Writers Festival. Both are on Wednesday, the 17th of October, 2012. The first at 6 p.m. on a panel celebrating Doubleday's 75th anniversary, and the second on a panel entitled Uprooted, hosted by Lawrence Hill. That's at 8 p.m. Visit writersfest.bc.ca. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, M.G. Vasanji. Dr. Vasanji, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. Are there similarities between you and Kamal?
I don't think so. I'm not a doctor, for one thing.
Yeah.
I don't live in Edmonton, for another thing.
That's the other thing about Edmonton. One reviewer said that they like this book because Edmonton appears in fiction where it hasn't before. The idea of setting a part of the story in Edmonton, where did that come from?
Well, I mean, without naming names, I know, first of all, I needed a place not like Toronto, which is, you know, kind of hectic and preoccupies you in many other ways. So I needed a place that was a bit quiet, where a person like Kamal can somehow, you know, come to terms with himself or just be by himself. And I also happen to know doctors in Alberta, in fact, in Calgary, more than Edmonton, but I think also in Edmonton, who live similar lives. At least that's what I imagine.
Yeah.
So I know some people there, and I thought it would be a good place to put someone there and then leave him in some kind of isolation, as I imagine Edmonton to give you from a Toronto perspective.
Yeah. So do you spend much time there, or have you?
I just go on and off, right, to Calgary or Edmonton.
Yeah. So I guess the one similarity between you and Kamal is that you were both born in Tanzania. Is that right?
No, I was born in Kenya and raised in Tanzania.
You were raised in Tanzania. How long did you spend there?
I left at the age of 20.
Yeah. And then
when you're born in a place, you don't think in terms of how long you spent there.
Yeah.
It's your place.
And how many times have you been back, say, since you returned?
Many times.
Yeah.
But recently more so when I was sort of researching this book and also thinking of a travel memoir that I'm working on now.
The last memoir that you did on India was such a great book.
Sorry?
The book on India?
Of course, I used to go there a lot to just see different parts of India. With Tanzania, I guess when I went to sort of look at the place where I had set this novel, at least the beginning of this novel, I met a few people and I thought it would be a good thing to sort of travel around and discover Tanzania, places that I knew about but hadn't been or there or just make it alive, you know, because the thing with Africa is, you know, it's just seen in a very kind of, you know, prejudiced way. It's kind of a helpless place or a poor place or a war-torn place, but when you go there, you know, it's full of life, you know, it's teeming with life also. So I just thought, you know, for me, coming from that place, I wanted to bring it alive in a book.
Yeah, and it's a hopeful place, do you think?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, in some ways it is, because if you're just looking at the economic news, you know, there's a lot of gas and there's minerals and there's, you know, oil offshore and so on. There's also a lot of corruption and unequal distribution of wealth. So it's hard to say. But in the long run, of course, it's unless one feels pessimistic about the entire world. which is possible in today's world, but if not, then, you know, Africa obviously is the next frontier, because that's the one place that is waiting to sort of grow and just leap out, you know. I mean, it's just waiting, and I think sooner or later the time will come.
Do you use your books or your characters, say, to speak to contemporary issues about how you think, say, about the colonial experience or Africa, the government, say, corruption and the sort?
Not explicitly, except once in a while I put in an aside in the mouth of a character.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not crucial, you know. It just, in terms of conversation, something, someone might mention something. In this case, I have a little half a page description of foreign aid, you know, which
yeah.
You know, where a kind of foreign aid has turned Africa into a patient, you know, a kind of just a beggar continent, or at least Tanzania and other places, into beggar countries. And so it's just nothing crucial to the book, but a kind of conversational piece. Also, it's a way to describe the passage of time. Because when I was young, we were told in Africa the main sort of slogans we heard was self-help and self-reliance. Whereas nowadays it's all foreign aid. So, you know, just discussing those two also gives you a sense of how time has, you know, changed the place. So, but not that, you know, I don't sort of use my books to preach. You know, there's no point in doing that.
Now, back to Kamal, and I'm sure you're asked the similarities between the two. He spends his professional life in Edmonton as a doctor, and in middle age, he goes through some sort of crisis and decides to go back to look for this love of his life back in Tanzania. Did you have a similar experience, say, when you hit middle age?
No, my love of my life is in Toronto at present.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's hardly. But it was a kind of love story that I used as a frame to sort of tell other stories also, including the story of two poets from a distant past, two poets who are brothers. But I described a situation which I know about, in the sense that people of my generation who came to Canada, some went to other places, did well, and the children are at university, and these guys, you know, paid off their houses, and they're professionals. So at some point in the lives of some people, you know, there comes a time in which they want to come to terms with some aspect of their past. So some people go to India, look at the village of their grandfather or grandmother, or they go back to Africa and, you know, help out in some school. I know those cases. And in some cases, they look up a woman or man they knew from a long time ago. In fact, I know of a case that happened where that happened. So all these things are possible, and they do happen. But for me, that was a framework. It was a love story, but a love story obviously depends on who's making love.
Yeah.
And in this case, it's Kamal and Saida, and where it's set, which is a little bit of Edmonton, but mostly in this town on the east coast of Africa.
And the way you described the framework of the story, I mean, that is a Canadian story, and I guess it's a story that only Canadians can tell, or that it doesn't matter what your background is, that you will say appreciate that more than, say, I don't know, American readers or English readers, perhaps.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's nothing special about this country or any other country. People at a certain age do.
Yeah.
Sort of go back mentally or become spiritual or want to come to terms with their lives. Maybe Canada a little easier because you feel at ease being what you are, instead of trying to defend the fact that you come from somewhere else and somehow have to prove something. But that was over in the 1980s. And I don't think Canadians from different backgrounds have to prove anything or to raise a flag or wave a flag around as vigorously as they can to make it seem that they are Canadians. So maybe from that perspective, it's easier here than the UK, for example.
In the time that you spent writing this book, did you think about yourself and who you are?
Well, I always think of who I am.
Yeah.
Everyone, I think, does it, but, you know, as a writer, you do it more, I suppose, or you have more time to do it, I don't know.
Did you come away with say, different interpretations of who you are after writing this book?
No, I don't think so. This is just a fictionist novel. I think with maybe the India book, maybe it's a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because that was like going back to ancestry and a part of India that I thought I'd closed off, and then I realized that, you know, it was still a part of me. So that, of course, was a different experience. This one was just a love story and allowed me to maybe think about East Africa in more intimate terms. You know, it's dealt with, in a certain affection, a certain sense of belonging, but not in terms of who I am, because, you know, I've been doing that for a long time, thinking about who I am, you know.
And do you think you understand East Africa better after writing this book?
No, because East Africa changes all the time. You know, I dealt with only a certain aspect of East African coastal culture, but the culture itself has changed dramatically, so I did not pretend to sort of speak about as it exists now, except in asides, you know, your cell phones, and you know, how a lot of places have been allowed to decay, and you know, the neglect, and so, you know, that, of course, is what it's now. But it's also many other things. I was looking at certain traditions within the East African coastal culture, which is the tradition of poetry, which is almost gone, it seems to me. Some of the history, which nobody knows about. And just being able to write about a place, you know, bring it onto the pages of a book. So those are different things. It's my involvement with East Africa in this fashion, which I suppose being here allows me to do.
Why do you think it is that the poetry and the sort of culture that's lost, is there someone responsible for that? I mean, is that perhaps those of us in the West, or is that something that happens over there that they should
but
be doing?
More there. I think even when I was growing up, you see, the idea of somehow thinking about your history was not really important.
Yeah.
It was a question of getting ahead. Now for many it's a question of survival, in the sense of living a middle class, or you know, living a decent life is difficult. And then the greed, you know, the level of politics and general society. So culture there, you know, is not really developed in a way in which it is here. In a way you have poetry and literature and at least a respect for the past, in the sense that it is your past, you record it, and you know, and so on, and try to understand it and learn from it. There, I think, because of partly the struggles, partly it's not been encouraged, the leadership has been, I think you would obviously blame the leaders, you know, the school system and so on. But there was a Swahili culture, of course, a culture of poetry. When I was growing up, you would hear poetry on the radio every day. And there would be a poetry section in the newspaper every day where, you know, people would send in their poems. So it's a very much of a poetry-based culture. But the young people now, of course, there's also a westernization, you know, some hip-hop and so on.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is also poetry in a certain sense, but then the old tradition of writing poetry, you know, the old stanzas, and the poetry was recited in a certain tune, and poetry was used to write history, which is what I've explored in this book. I personally feel it's gone. There might be people who would dispute this, but that's what I felt, that it's not really a part of. It's been allowed to sort of go away to a large extent. And some of it is, of course, due to the socialist regime we had, which was well-meaning, but it just was inefficient, that we had for 20 years or more, in which it was all economics, but the economics failed, and, you know, there was contempt for what was considered elitism and what was useless and so on. So a lot of the literary traditions were not really allowed to thrive.
Well, one review of the book wondered if, with this book, if you were thinking about your own mortality. Were you?
Well, you know, coming from Indian tradition, you're born to sort of think about your mortality.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I've been thinking of mortality since I was very young. But perhaps the reviewer is not completely off point, you know. You do think of, you know, having written a number of books and, you know, reaching a certain age, and you do think of that mortality and legacy and so on. You know, kind of vanity, but it's part of life. So but he's not completely off the mark, but also the fact that in the Indian tradition, you know, mortality, at least the one I grew up in, and at least the one a lot of people, you know, of my age would have grown up in, the fact that at the end of it all, you know, we're all going to go the same way and leave nothing behind and so on. That was sort of part of my upbringing.
You mentioned that you're thinking of writing another travel memoir.
Yeah, about Tanzania. So what I've been doing is, after that trip, I went twice again.
Yeah.
And what I do is travel by bus. So, you know, I go to, you know, take long journeys by bus, sometimes with a companion, sometimes alone. And I also, before this book, I did some bus journeys in the 1990s. So I have a lot of notes from my travels, and I think I would like to go take one more bus journey and then finish a book that gives life to the place. You know, that, you know, when you go to a place, it's full of life, that, you know, it has history, it has different kinds of history, the coastal history and the interior history, and its culture, and, you know, because Africa is not much written about. And when it's written about, it's written about from a Western patronizing perspective, that it's, look at all these people dying of AIDS, or look at all these people starving, or, you know. Today I was looking at the BBC and I saw some girl from the UK, you know, took money to give lunch, school lunches in,
yes,
Malawi. It's that image of Africa, you know, it's a kind of basket case, what I think of as beggar nations. But when you go there, it's not like that, you know. And that idea, I think Africa has to come to terms not as a patient or as some beggar, but as a on equal terms. And the way you treat Africa on equal terms is, you know, you just see it as human beings like you and me, you know, with the same issues that we have.
Yeah.
People fall in love, people die, girls and boys go to school, you know, there are fights, you know, there's despair, there's happiness. Maybe there are some more troubles there, but, you know, you can find parts of Canada where there are troubles.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, that, of course, the Western world refuses to do, you know. You know, send, give you pictures of all these people dying, all these children with big bellies and running noses, and, you know, I somehow think I would like to do a little something different. Someone who comes from there, speaks the language, is comfortable traveling by bus, and, you know, and so on, and just to write about my experiences.
And that's the best way you think that it'll change our perception or attitudes?
Well, yeah, just to treat it as
yeah,
on equal terms. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, hardships are everywhere, you know, in the case of New Orleans, you know, where Cuba sent some aid there,
yeah.
You know, that there's trouble everywhere in the, you know, in the native communities. We have lots of problems here, which sometimes we turn away from, and, you know, there's wealth and there's poverty everywhere, but Africa somehow has slipped into this image of a place just there to serve the conscience of the wealthy. You feel guilty about your wealth, okay, send something to Africa. But in Africa, it's not just a beggar, you know. I mean, there's more to that.
Yeah.
But of course, it also depends on the Africans themselves, their attitudes.
And while you're on book tour promoting this novel, are you writing another novel at the same time, or how does that work for you?
Well, it turns out that I began a novel a while back, and then I came back to it last year. And so but I'm taking my time over it, you know. It's a different kind of novel, and I somehow, when I look at it every few months, I know it's there, but I want to take time to work, you know, finish it, and give it a little more life. So, yeah, I'm working on novels. I always have, you know, the time runs out, and, you know, you know there are all these ideas that you want to explore.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure talking again. Good luck with this book.
Thank you.
A reminder of two dates at the Writers' Festival, two events, Wednesday the 17th of October, that's at 6 p.m., celebrating Doubleday's 75th anniversary, And then at 8 p.m. on that same day, same night, I should say, a panel hosted by Lawrence Hill. mgvasanji.com is the website for more. The book is called The Magic of Saida. It's published by Doubleday. Its author, M.G. Vasanji, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.